Okay, over here. There's only one way I know to do that. We had a guy named Dan Green in our organization. He's still with the organization, works as a missionary down in Brazil. And this was during the heyday of the hippie thing and all of that, the flower power and whatever. And Dan Green went to the University of Arizona in Tucson and began a little ministry there. So he'd been a captain in the Marine Corps, so he put on his camouflage jacket, put on an old pair of jeans that were kind of grubby and so on, an old pair of boots, let his beard grow, let his hair grow. And every day he'd just go down there on campus and sit around with these people. Didn't push them, didn't preach to them, didn't testify to them, just sat around. Listened to them, watched them. They became interested in him. What are you doing? And he would talk to them, and back and forth. And this went on for months. Dan just sitting there among them and talking to them and gaining their confidence and their friendship. He came up with a little illustration that fit that time and that place better than the bridge did. Some of you know the bridge illustration. Had to do with a couple arrows and so on. He worked that out and shared that with them. And he saw a number, in fact, I should say a large number of these people come to Christ. But it took his going out there, identifying with them as best he could, and just sitting around and letting people look at him, talk to him, share their burdens with him, share their angers with him. I remember one guy said, "Your God must be the devil. If you believe that, your God is the devil." Dan sat there and smiled and just, you know, took a lot of guff. But there among that crowd, he saw remarkable fruit. Took a while, but he identified as best he could with them, just sat there and listened to them and tried to assimilate into his own soul and his own mind, what is it? What is it in these people's hearts and minds that caused them to go in this direction, to think this way? And he took the time to try to figure that out. And having assimilated all that, he was really a very, very fruitful individual. And I think that's what it takes, being willing to go out there and just listen. Another comment? Okay.
How do you develop staff accountability and character development in both single staff and multiple staff situations?
Run that by again. I don't think I quite caught what... Tell me what you're trying to say.
the thing of accountability.
Yeah. Okay, let's start there. You've got a multiple team here working on this campus.
Right.
What I used to do when I was running a collegiate ministry was I would get together with the guys on this little group, and we would spend 2 or 3 days together at the beginning of each new school year. And we'd meet at a place called The Island. It was out in the middle of the Platte River, as a matter of fact, and it was a nice place, but, you know, still in the middle of the Platte River, but we enjoyed it. And I'd say, okay, now let's think through it together. Now, what do we want to do this year in Bible study? Let's figure that out. So 2 or 3 would go over here, and they'd sit down under a tree, and they'd spend an afternoon thinking, well, let's see, we got this date here, here's September, here's June, we got the year in front. What do we do? So they'd think in terms of Romans and Titus and so on and whatever. Take a week out for Christmas. So they would propose that. Then we would talk about other things like, what should we do in our witnessing thrust? How should we handle that this year? Some changes need to be made. We know what we did last year, what worked and didn't work. What should we do in our witnessing thrust? So 2 or 3 we get together and we work on that. And then before the year began, you know, on the campus year, we would have in our minds what we will do. And then we would hold each other accountable to do that, because we had decided these things together. It wasn't some big leader come stomping in with his big muddy boots and saying, this year, these are the rules. We would let these things emerge from the troops. And I'll tell you one danger in that is oftentimes they set themselves too high a standard. So then you got to say, well, look, that's all good and everything, but it might be a little much for us. Let's start, and I'd try to push it down a little bit, and they could see the wisdom of that, I think. But anyhow, we decided among ourselves what we would do, and we held ourselves accountable to it. Now, if you're talking about a single staff, when I went to the Midwest, to begin a navigator work there, there was nobody around. Not nobody around. I heard of a guy named Bill Haskell who had moved to Des Moines from Long Beach, California, and I heard he'd had some contact with a navigator. We went and found and searched him out, trying to find this somebody else that kind of talked our language. So what I did during those days when I was all alone and nobody around, nobody could see what I did or didn't do, I had come across a book called The True Believer by Eric Hoffer. It's not a Christian book, but it's a very interesting book. If you want to read something very, very interesting, it parallels the book of Acts. The True Believer. And I saw in that book that there were two things that needed to be in a person's life: sacrifice and unity of heart and spirit. So I began to pray that God would send me some people that I could work with and help and so on. And sure enough, God sent two guys, a guy named Ron Rohrbaugh and a guy named Bob Stevens. And that would happen in a matter of 2 or 3 months. They moved into the home, and I had them watch me day and night, living in a home together. And although there was no other staff, there was no anybody around, my wife and our two kids at the time, these guys saw me get up in the morning, you know, come to breakfast, spend the day, evenings, what I did. And I wanted these guys close enough to me, not only for what I could help them with them in their lives, but just the fact that there would be somebody watching me. And that in itself had a kind of a purifying effect on my life, knowing there are people, you know, everything you do. Watch how you hang up the dish rag or something. I mean, they watch that. So I worked it out so that I had people close enough to me that I kind of had to toe the line. Now, it used to bother me that there would be people, you know, like, and I was like this, I needed help in keeping up with my Bible study. If I got an accountability group here and we're going to do this, I'm more pressured to doing it than I'm kind of floating around by myself on it. It used to bother me that I would need those people. Doesn't bother me anymore. You know why? Because that's God's intent. God put us in a body. God did not make a bunch of lone wolf individuals, each of us out here on the hillside, you know. He wants us to run in a pack and be close to each other. And so the very fact that I need other people to watch me and ask me questions, and Jim talked about this morning, Dawson Troutman, being asked that question, Doss, there's something wrong going in your life here. You've lost the old punch and so on, simply because there were people. These were not Dawson's peers. These were not other staff. This is just a bunch of guys working the mimeograph machine, probably, or the old Ditto machine. But they were close enough. So I think maintaining some way where you can have people close enough to you that they know they're watching you, and that you need their, that you want to be doing what you're doing, of course, for the Lord, but the fact that God put us in a body and we need each other, I think that's just the way it should be. And I don't gripe at myself anymore because there's no one around, because I have to have some kind of accountability group in order to maintain my walk with the Lord, because that's the way God put the thing together. Okay? Yes. To put it simply, you got to go slower. It takes longer. Because even though we found some abysmal ignorance of the Bible and God and true Christianity back when in the 50s, late 40s and 50s, when I got started in this, and then in the 60s, today it is almost a blank. And it just takes a while to get through that whole thing that got built up. It just takes longer. So I think if there's one thing that I would say that I've seen, it just takes longer. It still can be done. We've all heard how people come to Christ. In fact, the other night at our testimony meeting here, people talked about people coming to Christ here. So we know that happened. But as a general rule, it takes longer because people are just not as acquainted with. Their dad forsook it, their grandmother forsook it, you know, and so they're out here with very, very little information. It takes longer to do it. But it can be done. I'm afraid of the word potential because I've discovered I'm not much of a seer. I'm not much of a prophet. I look at these two guys over here and I think that one's going to make it. Man, he's got all the potential in the world. He's got this ability, that ability. And here's this guy here. He doesn't have much of anything. And so all my attention and my interest gravitates to this guy. And then I discover that God has this uncomfortable practice of laying his hand on the wrong man. So I'm a little afraid of looking for potential. I really like to see performance. I like to just have people around and watch them for a while and see which ones. You remember opening my first session, we talked about that. Having them around and watching how they get involved and how they want to show up early and straighten the chairs, get the lights on, get the ventilation right, you know, just the normal stuff. I'm a little afraid of that word potential for myself. You can't work with people you don't have. That's A. So B is you take what you got. If you don't have anything, you go out and evangelize, you know, for the first semester or something. But you've got to use whatever is around. And this is where I think this small group idea that I talk about in the other section, get them together in a group, try to feed them, try to nourish them, get them doing some Bible study and so on, memorizing a few verses, and just hopefully watch one of them come to the top, and then give yourself to that one. Very little. They still evaporate somehow. They're going great, and all of a sudden, poof, where'd they go? You know, in some kind of a vapor. But you know, we've worked on it and worked on it and worked on it. And there are a couple things that that we have found helpful. At our weekend conferences, there are some people out there who invite two kind of experts to come. One, they'll call Glen Erie. And they'll say, do we have any missionaries home from the field? Yeah, we got Joe Blow up here in Minnesota. So they call Joe and says, will you come to our missionary, our weekend conference, and kind of just counsel people that feel led in that direction, give them some information that they need, going into full-time work, being a missionary, whatever. Then they'll get a hold of some businessman from Kansas City who's got his head screwed on straight and really knows what the ministry's all about as a businessman, and they'll get him to come. And then they'll tell the conference. Now, if you feel that God is leading you toward going out here in Kansas City or down here in Topeka or over here in Minneapolis getting a job, we got a guy here today who knows how to disciple people. He's a real laborer and so on, and he's also a top-notch businessman. If you want to find out how to go at that, here's a guy that's got the information, and he'll be available from 2 o'clock this afternoon on or whatever. Then you have these two crowds here. You have some that feel like that God's calling me to full-time work, missionaries and so on. So I talk to a missionary. This fellow over here, he talks to this businessman. This businessman tells him some of the dangers, some of the problems, some of the heartache, some of the joy that he faces. And so before the kid ever graduates, or before he may not even be very far along in his schooling, he begins to think in terms of what this guy says. And he gets some information from an old warrior that's been at it. That's one thing that we have found helpful in helping people make that kind of a transition. Let them know what they're facing. Because people they can leave a campus ministry with kind of their heads in the clouds. In a businessman's work, if I saw, I don't think I'd recognize a good businessman's work if I saw it coming down the road. I've not been involved in that end of things all that much. But just being around and looking at the thing, there are a couple things that I've observed. One, you cannot equate time involvement with lordship. See, the guy over here at Kansas State University, if he doesn't come to every prayer meeting, if he doesn't come to every Bible study, every rally, if he misses two or three, he's got a lordship problem. We better go sit down and talk to that brother. I mean, what else is to do at Kansas State but come to the rally, go to the Bible study, see? He's got a lordship problem. So then we translate that over here to the businessman, and he doesn't show up at every rally, every Bible study, you know, and we say, he's got a lordship. No, he didn't. He's got the PTA. He's got the Kiwanis Club. He's got his church. He's got his family. He's got his job. He's got a lot of stuff that demand time and legitimate things. And so you've got to be able to filter in your mind the difference between a lordship problem, he's not at every meeting, and the very fact that he's got other things to do. And here again, like we talked about earlier about today's college crowd, it just takes longer because he's got greater responsibility. And when you go out to conduct a businessman or a community ministry, You just got to recognize the fact there's a lot of things around that need to get done. Gene, do you have a comment on that? I see you back there. We're talking about a businessman's work and just what's the difference and how you keep them tied in or whatever. Any word on that for us? Okay. Thanks. Okay. Well, there are a couple things. I have never seen a person make it over the long haul who at some point early on in his Christian life did not get actively involved in the life of a local church. Now, you'll all give me the fact that I've not been everywhere and not seen everything. So you understand that. I haven't been everywhere. I haven't seen everything. And there may be some of you who say, well, I've seen it. Okay, that, I'm just saying that I've never seen it. If a guy tries to ignore an involvement in the local church as he's coming along, somehow or another, there's a big hole developed in his life that the devil can use to easily lead him astray. Because there's something different about the church than about the BSU movement or the Navigators, collegiate ministry or whatever like that, Campus Crusade for Christ. Because this is a little thing over here where everything is geared to unity. They all wear the same T-shirts. They all have the same yells. They all go to the old root for the same football team. They all do everything together. But once he gets out here, he's with a bunch of people. This guy is for Oklahoma. This guy is for Nebraska. This guy is for Penn State. You know, and he's working with people that are not have that unity, that common thing. So there's something about week by week his involvement with people in the church, old people, young people, grandmothers, granddaughters, the whole spectrum where he's in there. There's something about being a part of that body that really does have a tenacious hold on the individual if he gets involved in that thing. And as a general rule, that's one of the things that I really work at with people. Remember the other night I was telling you about the guy with the record that deep on the floor and those fur coats and everything? See, right the next day after he accepted Christ, we tried to get him involved in that church, and we got him involved. So wherever you are in your walk with God, if you try to ignore that, and I pick up a little bit of something here that in our conversation about the church over here and BSU over here, the thing you guys have got to remember, they are allies. I mean, that's not the enemy out there. Those are allies. See, those are people that are for us. They're involved in the same thing. And we got to think in terms of that concept. Brothers and people need that hold. Secondly, the different specific things that hit a new babe are very different than the thing that hit a growing Christian, that hit a laborer. I mentioned the other night that for laborers, burnout. One of the big things. People think they're Superman, keep going. The first thing you know, they're no longer laboring in the harvest. For the growing Christian, I think that probably at the top of the list that I would put there is the inability somehow to trust God to keep him faithful in the basics. The basics are really exciting for the new babe in Christ. He sees a bunch of new stuff and so on. But as he goes on in his Christian life, walking along toward that place where he's an established disciple, somehow or other, it's easy to begin to drag your heels, drag your feet, and those basics begin to drop off. And when that happens, you've got problems. So those two things, I think, I would comment on. For the laborer, the burnout, for the growing disciple, unfaithfulness in the basics, no one around to kind of keep him going, and so on. With a new babe, well, you get him into a cold church, he can freeze to death, you know. Or he can put him over here someplace where he's an orphan and he can starve to death. There's a lot of problems there. Okay? There are four things you got to do to build a team. You've got to have a weekly Bible study together where there's some accountability and you include scripture memory in the Bible study. So you spend the first 5 to 8 minutes checking each other on your verses and then go into the study. You do your study and come together and discuss it. That'll help build that team. Secondly, you got to pray together. But if you're trying to form a team The thing you pray about in that meeting is not the missionary over here in Tibet, the missionary down here in Latin America. You're praying about those people that you're trying to reach for Christ. Pray about those people that are close, the people you've witnessed to but haven't come across the line yet. Pray about those people that are new, people that you've witnessed to, they've come to Christ, they're brand new babes. Pray for those people that you want to begin a friendship with. He sits next to you in the geography class every week. So you're getting to know him. Pray for that guy that somehow you'll be able to give the gospel. And you keep your prayers kind of limited to your own mission field. This is not to say that we don't have time. We pray for the guy in Tibet. Of course we do. But if we're talking about a team thing, we're praying about those things that are of personal concern to us right now and this mission field where God has put us. So that's usually a weekly thing. I like to see that done weekly. And I used to do that, by the way, early Sunday morning. You don't conflict with anybody early Sunday morning. So get together at 7 o'clock, have your prayer meeting, eat breakfast, and go to Sunday school. It works out very simply. The third thing that I would try to do would be to figure out some way where we can witness together as a team, have some kind of witnessing outreach, some kind of witnessing endeavor, where we have some kind of team play in that thing. Now, there's a couple kinds of witnessing that we all know about. One is kind of the friendship thing, where you just sort of witness to the person kind of that comes and drifts in. And there's the other is where you plan a Thursday night, we're going to go down and sit down in the student union and try to talk to some people. Both are important. This over here is the ideal. But you don't see this here, this kind of a friendship, relational type thing, do much over a long haul if there's not some kind of thing over here where you're out at it and you're talking to people about Christ on kind of an organized basis. This keeps the spirit warm for this. If you drop off this, pretty soon this begins to get a little mushy. I was talking to a guy recently. He had a ministry team. And he was telling me, he says, there's not one person on my ministry team who has witnessed to anybody for the last 6 months. Ministry team. Because they had dropped off all direct, straightforward evangelism, some kind of a program. They dropped all of that off. They were relying on this, and that had become very, very mushy. He said, what'll I do? I said, that's very simple. The first thing to do is change the name. You don't have a ministry. You've got a fellowship group. So, okay, fellowship group, let's get together and fellowship. And that's kind of a good thing. We drop that name. And secondly, you find one guy that may have a heart for the thing and get him at it again, and then give war stories of what happened when you were out there. But you need both of those things. Listen, we got to quit. We got the ladies going over to Furs, I think it is, and so on. So I'll turn this back to you. Oh, having fun together. All kinds of stuff to have fun together. Because having fun together is a very cohesive thing. The highest form of identity is having fun together.